Well, 2020 is in the bag. For better or for worse, we made it out the other side, and now that I've had my champagne, watched the ball drop, I think it's safe to say that this hellish nightmare of a year is over. Just kidding. I don't think a whole lot will change except the year when we write the date. I think that 2021 is going to be host to a whole mess of headaches, craziness, and I intend to be right there with the rest of you all, breaking it down bi-weekly on this show. Like last year, I opened up the voicemail inbox for calls on this episode. We'll get to some of those later, but I didn't want to just do calls. So instead, before we go to the calls, I'm going to do a quick rundown on this Stop the Steal movement that has been at the forefront of the Trump world push since the election. Without further hold up, Happy New Year. This is Shitpost. Let's dive in.
This is a battle between good and evil.
We're here for a fair and honest election. Hey, let me hear you today. We're going to get loud.
The vote was not legitimate. We want a fair and transparent vote for the American people, and that's why we're out here.
That's true.
These men and women that died for this country to stop communism being spread across this country is being infiltrated in this country right now through the legal process and the electoral process. Are we going to stand for that?
Stop the steal. The phrase "stop the steal" is catchy. It's easy to remember. And more importantly, it's easy to chant at rallies. The Southern Poverty Law Center reported that those three words originate with a former Trump advisor, convicted felon since rescued by Trump, Roger Stone. The SPLC reports, Stone started promoting a group of would-be poll watchers called Stop the Steal during the 2016 election, first under the auspices of defending Trump's Republican primary nomination, and later contesting a potential Hillary Clinton victory that never manifested. Stone created the group to uncover voter fraud, which experts say is not a significant problem in U.S. elections. Democrats sued Stone over the group at the time, arguing that it sought to intimidate non-white voters. Stone denied that allegation. Far-right activists linked to Stone picked up the slogan a second time, during the Florida gubernatorial race in 2018, when Republican Ron DeSantis defeated Democrat Andrew Gillum by a margin of under 1 percentage point. Nowadays, the phrase is the leading chant of a national protest movement that seeks to exert die-hard Trump supporters' influence in Republican politics. What they hope to do is overturn the results of November's election and to give Donald Trump a victory that he did not earn. They believe that the deep state, the media, some members of the Republican Party even, or frankly whoever is the target of the day, effectively stole the election from Donald Trump. Protests bearing this mantra have taken place at nearly every state capital and twice in D.C., with another scheduled for January 6th. Trump has even picked up on the messaging himself, tweeting about stopping the steal, and the movement has garnered buy-in from Republican members of Congress, prominent activists, and even some right-wing media personalities for some time. January 6th, this upcoming Wednesday, could be the last big flash of in the pan that we see from this movement. Trump himself called for protest in D.C. on January 6th, which coincides with the counting of Electoral College votes during a special joint session of Congress. The hope, it seems, is to encourage Republican members of Congress and Vice President Mike Pence to use the powers they have to hand Trump a process win. Personally, I don't think this is going to happen. Joe Biden is not an actual threat to the Republican Party, and Trump is not useful to the broader Republican Party if he can't bring home election wins on his own. The GOP got everything it wanted and more in the last 4 years, and installed its influence in institutions like the court system in ways that will be felt for decades, no matter who is in the Oval Office. If I'm wrong, I'll gladly eat my words here, but if I'm wrong, there's more serious of a problem at hand than, you know, me being a little naive, I suppose. At these protests, it began a collection of sort of MAGA normies, the grandmas and grandpas of the movement, if you will, the Fox News religious diehard watchers. But increasingly, as the process goes on, what we're seeing more and more of at these protest events are just clusters of Trump's most extreme supporters, frequently and often members of neo-fascist groups like the Proud Boys, activists associated with the white nationalist movement, conspiracy theorists and QAnon believers, and even militia groups have attended protests bearing the Stop the Steal mantra, particularly in states that were slower to count due to the closeness of results. States like Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, etc. As the results of the election have moved through the democratic system, and reasonable people, people who have not bought the lies they've been sold from the Trump campaign about the integrity of the election, more of those folks are staying home. And not to overlook the fact that it is getting colder. It is the holidays. You know, people are less motivated to go stand outside for hours to chant on this cause that at the end of the day, you know, despite whatever incremental wins in the form of support from different politicians or media platform or fundraising, at the end of the day, they're not going to make this happen. They are not going to, quote unquote, stop the steal. So January 6th is really shaping up to be kind of the last hurrah for many people in this movement. It's going to be a large DC protest. There are, I think, 4 separate rallies organized right now. And that's something that we've seen at prior events in DC too, which is you have these different clusters of the Trump base. You have the institutional kind in the form of like the Tea Party. You get speakers there like Sebastian Gorka. You have members of white nationalist youth movements largely doing their own thing. You've got conspiracy theorists, new media people. So you have all these different competing factions coming to DC, and it just becomes this big muddied mess, and oftentimes in DC has wound up with some violence in the street. Last time, the Proud Boys vandalized a couple of black churches in DC. I don't expect that January 6th will be too much different. The rhetoric among people who are part of this national protest movement has only grown more intense. The Washington Post reported just yesterday that threats of violence, ploys to smuggle guns into the District of Columbia, DC, and calls to set up armed encampments on the National Mall have proliferated in online chats about the January 6th day of protest. As I mentioned earlier, these protests have attracted extremists, but they've also attracted otherwise well-meaning Trump supporters. Do they support somebody that I find below contempt, somebody who incites hate groups and radicalism? Yes, but, you know, in their mind, you know, what I'm talking about is intent. But make no mistake, you know, even if this is promoted by the president or Fox News or whatever, the organizers behind this movement are a who's who of far-right political personalities. You have people like Ed Martin, who is one of the sons of Phyllis Schlafly, the anti-feminist activist. He's a big religious right extremist and has one of the Phyllis Schlafly, I forget which one, I think it's Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. I don't know, but there's could do a whole episode on that guy and the Schlafly family. I might have to next year. You've got Brandon Straka, who is famous for launching the hashtag walk away movement. You've got Alex Jones, I'm sure needs no explanation, InfoWars conspiracy theorist. Michael Codry, who is a associate of anti-Semites and far-right extremists. He's a serial disinformer, a conspiracy theorist. You've got Representative Paul Gosar, a member of Congress with ties to the extreme right. You've had Mike Cernovich in the mix, who is just, I don't even know how to describe him anymore. I would say like extremist curious or extremist enabling. Jack Posobiec, who is a fascist collaborator. And it's been boosted by sites like Breitbart, the Gateway Pundit. But at the heart of all of the organizing is this fringe conservative activist who goes by the name Ali Alexander. He used to go by Ali Akbar, but that was a problem because if you type those names, that name into Google, you find mugshots of him. Ali Alexander has frequently sympathized and promoted extremist right-wing political figures, particularly those who espouse conspiratorial and racist beliefs. In 2017, I wrote a piece for Right Wing Watch about him hosting this guy named Matt Colligan, who attended Unite the Right, and he went on Ali Alexander's podcast, which at the time was hosted with Lucian Wintrich, who was the Gateway Pundit's White House guy for a little bit. And during the podcast interview, they were heaping praise on him, and he just lifts up this big Nazi flag. You know, he got a real kick out of it. The Observer reported in 2018 that Ali Alexander had, at the time, made it a habit to note members of the media who were Jewish when criticizing them. So this guy is extremist enabling. He's fringe, but he's not that fringe. He's connected with people like Steve Bannon. He met with Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey regarding whether the site should ban Alex Jones. And he's been, you know, kind of behind a few different street organizing efforts and has been connected to some political campaigns in informal capacities. I did a little digging on Ali Alexander at DFR Lab recently. The Stop the Steal website, the main one that is being used to coordinate this national protest movement, is linked to something called Vice and Victory. This is a digital marketing firm that Ali Alexander has run for years. It is his pet project. And it's also gotten him into some hot water regarding the way that it handles data. It's been accused of getting data from people and then vending it out to super PACs and various right-wing causes. Vice and Victory's domain history, if you look at it, I use this tool called Domain Tools to see where it had appeared on, you know, every website registration it appeared on. And what I found is kind of a history of Ali Alexander's efforts to become somebody in politics, and it goes back nearly a decade. Many of his websites are no longer active, but the site URLs give you a pretty good idea of what's going on there. Ali Alexander is an activist who started in Southern state politics, and he cycled through a few short-lived organizing efforts, none of which super caught on. He was a huge fan of Andrew Breitbart. He had many website sites dedicated to Andrew Breitbart after he died. A lot of his sites focused on black identity, including blacksfortrump.com and blacklivesmatterwatch.org. And a few of them even appeared to be like financial advice blogs. So probably the most success he had as he cycled through project after project trying to see what would stick was something called National Bloggers Club. During the blogging heyday of the news industry, he came up with something called National Bloggers Club with an associate, but it quickly came under fire because it just wasn't transparent. It required a great deal of personal information from people who were interested in joining, and it had ties to Republican super PACs that weren't ever explained. And when people, particularly journalists who are signing up for this, tried to push, they didn't turn up much. It claimed to be a nonprofit. It was never registered as one. And so it's just this pattern of this guy trying to cobble together these efforts and managing to step on his own tail by making it too scammy. And it doesn't really seem like that behavior has changed for him. In 2019, Ali Alexander participated in a so-called philanthropic effort where this right-wing millionaire, billionaire, whatever guy was giving people money to say, I want to give away $1,000 to somebody. Just reply with your Cash App and follow me and retweet this. Essentially, just buying Twitter followers in a way that doesn't violate TOS. So, given all that history, this guy at the spearhead of this national protest movement is, anything but respectable. So, despite who might attend the rallies, who might promote them, who might bolster them, at its core, this organizing effort, the engine driving it, is far-right political activists that cut their teeth in the Trump era. And as the Trump administration and Trump himself grow more and more desperate to come up with some alternative reality where Trump won the election, they are going back to the bread and butter that catapulted him into office, which is this online fringe extreme element. And that should be the underscoring of every way that we talk about these events, that we look at these events, and how we prepare for these events. Although so many people involved in this effort are grifters, they are doing something that could be, has been, dangerous. And thanks for listening to my little soapbox there. We are now going to see what we've got in the old voicemail inbox.
The number you have reached has been disconnected.
Hey, Mr. Shippost, this is me, Jimmy Wombat, sir. Just wanted to call because I have a little bit of a question here, thinking about, 2020, looking forward to 2021. On the topic of fascism, there's a sense that it's a hyper-politicized word. It's only used, against your enemies, people, you don't like. The loony left uses it all the time, of course. But if the historian Robert Paxton says that, fascism goes through a series of stages. He enumerates five, but you get the idea. Doesn't that say that it's kind of a contingent? It can mean different things at different times. And then, of course, Umberto Eco, the semiotician, he says that it's sort of like a Wittgenstein's idea of a game. It could be a number of different features could be a part of it, and then on top of that you got like Federico Finkelstein. He's like the deliberate ambiguity in the contemporary right-wing populace about whether they support fascism or they're trying to reinvent the historical legacy of it. It all sort of points to a question of, doesn't it still have a good application of a use of the term specifically because contemporary far-right extremists are so dicey about it? Anyway, I love the year, the whole concept of it, and the new year. See you later.
Thank you, caller. I think I've got a good idea of who that was. As far as fascism as a term, I have honestly not thought so much about it, but perhaps that's just because fascist is such a loaded word that in my reporting in the past, rather than use the word unless it's perfectly accurate, I've kind of tried to show it instead of say it. But to the efficacy of using a term like fascism when it is so loaded, you know, I tend to agree with, you know, one of the folks that you brought up, which is that it can mean different things at different times. You know, fascism in its many forms in history has been underscored by the, you know, religious worship of a authoritarian leader. It's been hard right. And, you know, I don't think that it's so inappropriate to use it now. So even though I have my own hang-ups about using it too liberally, you know, I tend to agree that, you know, sometimes that's just the word for it, and that fascism as a concept is not, you know, there's not necessarily a clean checklist that we can run down. So I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it. Maybe that wasn't as clear as I thought.
Jared, hey, it's Dwight from Eat the Rich. Listen, I must have missed you, but, you know, I was hoping if I could get a hold of you later, maybe we could talk about, you know, you've been a real good buddy coming on Eat the Rich, you know, this year and last year as well. It's been really nice. You were kind enough to host me on your podcast. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Shitpost. And I think, you know, this was as appropriate a time as ever to announce kind of what we're doing, what I'm doing really, going forward to 2021. And so I'd like to announce, that I've gone through with a partnership with the global oil field service company, Schlumberger International. They have an exciting portfolio of products between drilling, rigs and equipment, bottom hole assemblies, drilling fluids, well cementing, surface and downhole logging, and of course, not to mention what they're capable of doing with their completions, with well completions, artificial lifts, stimulation, and then, of course, you know, with intervention, coiled tube intervention, slick line and wire intervention. Between the amount of stuff that they can do with upstream, midstream, and downstream oil field services, I think it's a very exciting partnership. They're going to be paying me entirely in local currency, which in my case is going to be the Iraqi dinar. And so, you know, perhaps maybe you can come by and we can go to a rig site and see what kind of exciting oil field products the Schlumberger people are able to provide for us and power the way that we live. So anyway, listen, I got to hop on this yacht. We're going on board. We're going to go sink people with smaller vessels. So anyway, I hope to catch you up in 2021, and take care. Be well.
Dwight, it's good to hear from you. I am, I guess, happy to hear that Eat the Rich is doing so well and you found this new investment opportunity in oil fields. Do hit me up, call me back. You know that I am always hankering for investment opportunities to boost the Iraqi dinar. Remember, revaluation is around the corner.
Happy 2021, Shitpost listeners, longtime listener of the pod. Very happy to have this past year over and done with. A terrible one to be in the books for sure. I do have one question, and this is out of genuine concern. But whatever happened to Jack? Back in the day when I first started listening to this podcast, Jack was a treasured part of the hour a day I would spend listening to Jared's dulcet tones sandwiched in between Jack's deep thoughts. Can you please give the listeners an update on Jack's whereabouts? I hope he is well. I hope he's doing okay. He was sort of the everyman representative of all of us listeners in this podcast. He was the ombudsman, if you will, to Jared's fact-finding. Be well. Take care. Have a happy new year.
Yeah, so he is doing just fine. I hope that is good news and reassuring. Ultimately, it came down to a scheduling thing. You know, that and episodes started to shift a little bit to be less news segmenty and more interview based. So because of that, I kind of went different ways. But maybe I'll have him back on sometime for old time's sake. We can take a episode around the block.
What's up, shitpost listeners? Jared, hey, what's up? It's Sam Knight, just calling in to wish you a happy new year and to say thank you, Jared, for all the work you do, keeping tabs on far-right shitheads. And I'm sorry to say that the next few years you will probably still have a lot of work to do. One day maybe we will be able to put you out of business, but alas, that does not look like it will be happening anytime soon. Anyway, keep up the good work. Shitpost, Jared, or should I say, S-post, or however it's actually spelled with the censoring. Anyway, I'm sorry. I fucked that up. And on that note, I will hang up. So once again, happy new year and, thank you, Jared. Bye.
Thanks, Sam. And I fortunately, unfortunately, depending how I look at it, will still have plenty of work to do this year and for the foreseeable future. These extremism is not a dormant threat. And I think under a Biden administration, especially if they do some gun regulation or something, which I don't know that they actually will, that could be motivation. Also, a lot of these groups get to switch to offense after 4 years of being in a defensive posture. So I think, I hate to look at it this way, but the worst is probably still to come. And as to the abbreviation for the show name, I think I've told the story before, but originally I was just going to call it Shitpost. And then when I went into iTunes, it would not let me put the word shit into the title of the show. So I just flipped it and made it an exclamation point. I thought it was fun and everything, but if I could do it all over again, I probably would have just come up with a different name instead of having to explain to people, oh, it's SH exclamation point T blah, blah, blah.
Hey, man, I really think stuff you do is important, and I really want to congratulate you for it, but I have one quick question first. Do you eat ass?
Do I eat ass? Yes.